Okay, today we're going to do the both the Agavita and Chav Tesam Beis as well as the Shatnas Getz Sugya. Tomorrow, from what I understand, is we're going on a trip and we're going somewhat early, so we'll have early shiur, and I guess we just won't have Seder or won't have full Seder, which is good because it might take 2 days to get through this whole sugya anyway in terms of shiur. We'll see. And then God willing, on Wednesday, we'll get to Rabbi Natam Tefillin versus Rashi Tefillin and that whole sugya. So let's get started with this Agadita. Just a few words about the Agadita before we get into the halachic elements, because I feel like a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, we're coming across it, so we should say something about it. And second of all, I feel like we could use a little breather from the highly technical, you know, where to draw little tiny lines in things that are hidden inside our batim that we don't see. So maybe just a little bit of Agadita is a welcome break for many of us. So the Gemara tells us this unbelievable story that B'Shah Shalom Moshe L'maro Matzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shiyoshe B'Koshe K'sarim La'osiyos. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on high and he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu tying crowns on tops of the letters. And what are K'sarim? What does it mean to tie crowns on top of the letters? So Rashi tells us that K'sarim are tagging. So we've seen two different words now to describe this thing that's on top of the letters, ksarim and tagin. The Gemara is then going to have a third word to describe what seems like the same thing. What's the third word it's going to describe? Ziyunin or zainin or something, right? So ksarim, tagim, zainin. It seems like they're all the same thing, and it's three words to describe the same thing. But okay, that's interesting. And he sees Hashem doing this. Amar lefan ribono shel mima akev al yadcha. What does that mean? Mima akev al yadcha. So Rashi says, mashik safta shata tzarech lehosef od aleihem ksarim. Meaning, what's wrong with what's already written? You have all the words, so you need to make decorations? What do you need to decorate things for? Meaning, which clearly seems to indicate a complete lack of understanding on Moshe Rabbeinu's part in terms of what Hashem was doing. That if these things have genuine meaning, Moshe didn't know it. So he's like, I don't understand what these decorations are about. Amar lo, Adam echad yesh sha'asa lios b'sof kama doros. Va'akiva ben Yosef Shemo sha'as lidrosh al kol kotz v'kotz tilei tilin shal alachos. There's going to be a guy that's going to come along in many generations that's going to darshan on every... Now we have a fourth, right? We have tagin, ksarin, zainin, and al kol kotz v'kotz. So that's interesting also. Four different ways to refer to the same thing. And he's going to darshan bundles or piles of halachos, mounds and mounds of halachos from each of these little details. Amar lefan of Ribono Shelam harehu li. I wanna meet this guy. Amar lo chazor la'acharecha. So you have to turn around. Halach v'yashav b'sof shmona shuros. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes and he sits at the end of the eighth row of Rabbi Akiva's classroom. See what goes unsaid over here, but is mavur in other places in Chazal, is that the way they used to sit is based on the way they would sit by a Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin says that they would sit, the Talmidim that would sit in front of the Sanhedrin would sit in the order of their gadlus. So if you're sitting in the first row, it means you're one of the stronger Talmidim. If you're sitting in the last row, it means you're one of the weaker Talmidim. If you're at the end of the eighth row, it means you're really one of the weaker Talmidim. My second grade Rebbe used to do this. He used to arrange us based on how smart you were. It's really good chinuch. Horrible, like we're all scarred. He used to like give us numbers at the beginning of each day and make a big deal out of it. And number 29 is, and like everyone would be like, oh, that guy's an idiot. No, he's like, every day. It was unbelievable. Okay, anyway, so... Whatever. So he, Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting at the end of the eighth row with B'sof Shmona Shuros. V'lo yodea mahin omrim. And he had no idea what they were saying. Meaning he didn't even understand the shir. He was sitting there and he had no clue what was going on. So Tashash Kocho, he felt very dejected, as one would feel if, you know, you're excited to learn something and you show up and you have no clue. Kivin she'igil davar echad, omr lo talmidav rebi minayin lach. But then the Talmidim started asking questions, and Rabbi Kiva said something. The Talmidim said, well, how do you know that that's true? What's this din of mechitza that you know? Where does this mechitza come from? Or shir kezayis, where does that come from? Samar lahan, halach l'moshe misinai. So he said, well, we only know this because Moshe Rabbeinu gave it down to us from our Sinai. It's halacha Moshe Mishinai. Nesiash v'daito, that comforted Moshe Rabbeinu. So the whole story, every detail, is so perplexing. First, was this an ego trip for Moshe? He needed to hear his name being quoted in Shir. Oh, he's quoting my name. Okay, so now I'm good, even though he didn't understand anything. But more fundamentally, how is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand? How is it possible that there's parts of Torah that Moshe didn't get? So then where does it come from? Where does Torah come from if it doesn't come from Moshe Rabbeinu? Very, very difficult. Meaning if it doesn't come through Moshe Rabbeinu, that just comes on our own. So the truth is that alone should not be terribly surprising. Because there are certainly halachos that we have that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't learn. The Chaznish is quoted as saying, I think he writes this in Emunah B'Tachlis, the Chaznish is quoted as saying that, people think that the world of Torah is a much more boring world or a much more backward world than the world of, let's say, scientific endeavor. You know, that in science there are new discoveries every day. People, they're finding new things. There's always advancement. And we're sitting here learning the same tagin that they were learning 1,000 years ago. We're learning the same sugis that they were learning 1,000 years ago. Nothing changed. It's all the same. And Chazanish said, no, it's fakert. It's just the opposite. He said, whatever we pick up in science has been here all along. Kadosh Baruch Hu put into the Bria all of this stuff that we're able to now tap into. Through the advancement, we're able to discover, but it's been here all along. When it comes to Torah, a Talmud Vasik is also the L'chadesh. Someone that comes up with a Kal V'chomer, someone comes up with a Svara, someone comes up with a Shtikl Torah, it's brand new. It's Mamish Achidish. It's something that wasn't around, that no one could have studied 1,000 years ago, because it didn't exist. And there's that dynamism to Torah. It's constantly moving, it's constantly evolving, it's constantly growing. So it could be that there are things that Rabbi Akiva was learning that, you know, would Moshe Rabbeinu follow the conversation about internet commerce on Shabbos? Or about, you know, whether microwave is a bishul, for Basa B'chalov and for Shabbos or for bishul Akum? He would have the tools to be able to resolve the question, but they're certainly not questions that he thought about, right? You would imagine. And we have books on these topics. So we're able to expand Torah in a certain sense. So there is this idea. Now over here, this is on a much more esoteric level. This is not, it's not just talking about being mechadish malachos. It's about darshaning tagin, which we don't even know what that means. But anyway, so that's what Moshe Rabbeinu realized. That's what Rabbi Akiva was able to do. It's also interesting that. This probably relates, and I'm going a little off topic here, but this probably relates to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Chaf Aleph. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Chaf Aleph and Beis tells us that when the Torah was given, the tzura of the letters was not like this. This is called Ksav Ashuris, the letters that we have. The tzura of the letters that we had initially was, anyone know what it was called? Ksav Ivri, Ksav Ivris. It was a totally different, like, the whole alphabet was different. I remember when I took Intro to Bible my first year in YU, I thought the professor was making the stuff up. Like, he started talking about, you know, the Ksav Ivri and what it must have looked like, and I was like, that's not true. And it is. It's a Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses how initially, when the Torah was given, B'tchila nitna Torah liYisrael b'Ksav Ivri v'Lashon HaKodesh. Initially, it was given b'ksav Ivri and Lashon HaKodesh. Chazur v'nitlan b'yimei Ezra b'ksav Ashuris v'Lashon Arami. And then during the days of Ezra, we changed the font of the Torah to ksav Ashuris, which is like remarkable, because if you think about that, first of all, what does ksav Ashuris mean? Where did we get that word, Ashuris? Ashur. What's Ashur? Assyria. So it was whatever, you know, letters they had. So we were using the Assyrian letters. And if you don't do that, you know, we keep talking about Tzura Sa'os. You know, that this is the Tzura Sa'os is an Assyrian letter. If you don't do that, it passes the whole Sefer Torah. And that's the halacha, apparently. So the whole thing is very difficult to understand. The Torah wasn't given in Ksav Ashuris. And all of these tagin, l'chora, are only on Ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ivri didn't have these tagin. But what it does shed light on is you understand why Moshe Rabbeinu had no clue what was going on. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even recognize the font. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, look, we have all the letters. They're different characters. They look different. I don't know what these tagin are about because they don't belong on the letters that I know about. He didn't get Ksav Ashuras. Now, the Ritva in Maseches Megillah finds it very hard to believe that Ksav Ashuras was first invented in Ashur. And the Ritva suggests, in Megillah Dav Beis, I think it is, that Ksav Ashuras must have been originally from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Luchos must have been B'Ksav Ashuras, but the Torah itself was B'Ksav Ivri, even though the Luchos were B'Ksav Ashuras. He says that's why the Gemara in Shabbos, I think Gemara in Shabbos says, Peches probably, that the Mem and Samach Shabaluchos B'Nes HaYu Omdim. Are you familiar with that Maimer Chazal? That, why is it B'Nes HaYu Omdim? Because right, it was through and through and the inside stayed. Well, that only makes sense in our font, right? If the letters were totally different, the Mem and Samach probably didn't have a hole in the middle in Ksav Ivri. So the Ritva suggests that the Luchos were in Ksav Ashuri. We lost the Ksav Ashuri and Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. So we had these two alternate traditions running simultaneously. One which we forgot for all those years and we only took back in Ashur. And that's why we called it Ksav Ashuris, but not because it's in the Assyrian alphabet, but because that's when we remembered it, or that's when we got it back, and that's when we started using it again. But that's why that explains why Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea what these tagin were about, because he was dealing with Ksav Ivri. Although if it was on the Luchos, maybe he should have had some clue about the Ksav Ashuri as well. Meaning, if that Ritva is correct that it was on the Luchos, maybe he should have known about the Ksav Ashuri as well.
Also, he recognized that Hashem was attaching
tagin to letters, so he recognized that they were letters at least. Yeah. Difficult. It's difficult to understand exactly what's going on. So then the Gemara tells us, so Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting there in Rabbi Akiva's classroom, and he feels a little bit better about himself, but he's clearly impressed with Rabbi Akiva. So he says, Chazor Abol V'nei Kodesh Baruch, he goes back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Amar L'fanav, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yesh Lecha Adam Kazeh V'ata Nosein Torah Al Yadai. There's going to be a person like this, like Rabbi Akiva, and you're giving me the Torah? Meaning, why don't you wait for him? You should give it to the one who's going to be the greatest. And he's obviously greater than me. He could darshan all these tagin. Amar lo, so what does Hashem respond? Shtok, kach ala b'machshava lefana. Be quiet. This was ala b'machshava. Meaning, this is after Moshe Rabbeinu sees the how Rabbi Akiva dies. I'm sorry, I skipped that part, right? Oh, no, it says it after. Okay. It says it twice. Right. It says it twice. Kachal machshav l'faray to give the Torah. So Amar l'faray ribono shalom, ariseni torasa areni scharo. You showed me his Torah, show me his schar. Amar l'chazor l'acharecha. You have to again turn around. Chazor l'acharev rosh shoklim b'soro b'makulin. He saw that they were combing his skin with these iron combs. They were killing him in this terrible way. He was being murdered. Amar l'faray ribono shalom zu Torah v'zu schara. That's the Torah, that's the schar you get for such Torah. I'm le shtok kachal makshav lefanai. So again, quiet, that's all the makshav lefanai, that's what I thought to do. So everyone asked the kasha, Allah b'makshava? It's not what he thought to do, it's what he did. Meaning, is this not a historical fact that that's how Rabbi Akiva died? I thought about that, but don't worry Moshe, it's taken care of. No, it's what you actually did. There's a beautiful piece in Kovitz Ma'amarim, Rabbi Chanan has, where he points out that he points out from the Shla Kadosh, I think it is, that Kach Olam Machshav Lefanai means as follows. There's a Medrash that says that initially HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create the world with Midas Hadin, but then he saw that the world Ein Olam Miskayim, the world would never stay, it wouldn't work for people if the world was created with Midas Hadin. Why? What does Midas Hadin mean? Midas Hadin is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you oxygen right now. So he's giving you oxygen so that you can do things that he wants you to do. And the second you do something that he doesn't want you to do, the second you speak one word of Lashon Hara, or you have one Hesech Hadas in your tefillin or anything, so he should stop giving you oxygen. And that would be the end of it. And of course, Baruch Hu said, well, that's not going to be very, that's not going to work out so well. There aren't going to be too many people left in the world. It's like Rav Shechter always says over the play that the Purim Spiel they once put on, that the Maskilim once put on in Brisk. They put on a spiel where they were showing, they were reenacting the whole scene of Jewish people going out to war. based on the Kohen Meshuach Mulchama, how the Kohen Meshuach Mulchama would get up and he would say, whoever is afraid of, whoever recently got married, you're putter from war, and like half, five people would walk off the stage, and then they would say, and whoever built a house, you're putter from, another five people would walk off the stage, and whoever is afraid of Avera Shabiyado, that you did an Avera, you could walk off the stage, and everyone walks off the stage except for the Chavetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Brisker. And the joke was that they're going to be the only soldiers left to fight the war. They say they told it over to Reb Chaim Brisker, and he said, "Yeah, but the next scene is that we actually win. That we're going to win that war." But that's the impression you get, that like, who's going to be left if HaKadosh Baruch Hu ran the world with Midasadin, you'd be left with the Chavetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Brisker. You'd be left with nobody. It would be impossible. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzarif, was mishtatif, midas harachamim with midas hadin. So says the Shulchan Kadosh, that's pshat in this Gemara. What's going on is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that really, why did Hashem want to create the world of midas hadin? Why is midas hadin better than midas harachamim? So he says that midas hadin, there's an advantage to midas hadin over midas harachamim. See, if you live life with midas hadin and you make it, then you've really made it. Meaning, you were given nothing as a gift. You earned everything. You get to Olam Haba, Lachar Me'eva Esrim, and you survived with Midas Hadin, you earned your keep. Whereas, if it's Midas HaRachm, and Hashem had to keep on forgiving things along the way, well, then we didn't really earn our keep. Then it's Nama de Kisufa. It's embarrassing. Like, we got in with nepotism. We got in with through the back door. That's like the story they tell in the Rav Eliyashiv biography, where they were trying to convince Rav Eliyashiv that he should go be sandik at his great-great-great-grandson's bris, where he said, "What's the big deal? I don't even think we're related to each other by so many generations." But they were trying to tell him that there's a skula that if someone is sandik by a great-great-great-grandson's bris, they go straight to Olam Haba. So Rav Eliyashiv says, "I plan on going in the front door, and I don't plan on sneaking through any back doors." No, but the kisufa, you don't want to have to sneak in through the back door. You want to be able to go in the right way. So that's the advantage of midas hadin over the midas harachmim. So that's what he explains, that shtok hachalav v'machshav lefana, is that every once in a while there will be a tzaddik who can survive with midas hadin, and if that tzaddik can make it through life with midas hadin, then his place in Olam Haba is going to be so much greater. It's going to be so much more meaningful for him because it's not Nama de Kisufa. It's not that he didn't go in through the back door. He didn't go in with chesed points from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He got in on his own by earning it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you think that this is such a terrible thing? This is a person who was able to survive with Midas Hadin. Rabbi Akiva worked himself up to the point where he's able to survive with Midas Hadin. Kach Ola B'Machshava, that's the Lashon of the Medrash, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Ola B'Machshava to create the world with Midas Hadin. Kach Ola B'Machshava Lefanai, that's the way I intended the world to be initially, and he's able to survive that way. So Rav Elchanan just points out, very interestingly, Rav Elchanan points out that the Rambam, in the Shemona Prakim, the Rambam describes what it takes, what a person needs to have in order to be a Navi, in order to qualify as a Navi. And the Rambam writes that in order to be a Navi, a person does not have to be perfect in order to be a Navi. Meaning, you got to be good, you have to be intelligent, the Rambam says, and you have to have a lot of really fantastic midos, but your midos don't have to be perfect. You could have some flaws in character. And the Rambam says, for example, there are great Nevi'im that lacked bitachon, on a certain level, on their madrega, that lacked bitachon. For example, he says, Shmuel HaNavi, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go anoint David as the next king, Shmuel HaNavi said, "How can I go? B'shama Shaul V'Argeni. Shaul's going to hear about this. Shaul's currently the king. He's going to kill me if I do this." Where's your bitachon, Shmuel? No bitachon. And here was a great Navi, Shmuel HaNavi. But he didn't have bitachon, that he had to ask, Shaul's going to kill me. Another example, the Rambam says, Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, it's time to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And Yaakov Avinu is terrified. He's terrified that Esav is coming with his 400 men, that Esav's going to kill him. Where's your bitachon? That you're going to be able to make it, that you'll be okay. So you see that you don't have to have perfect midos in order to be a Navi. So in the commentary, Chesed Avram, on the Rambam, the Shmona Prakim, he points out that it's a very shver Rambam. It's very difficult. What do you mean? that it's a lack of bitachon on Shmuel's part, it's a lack of bitachon on Yaakov's part. The Gemara asks that kasha on both Shmuel and Yaakov. How come they didn't trust that Hashem would take care of them? And the Gemara gives answers to that kasha, and it doesn't say they lacked bitachon. Familiar with these Gemaras? Gemara in Pesachim talks about Shluchim Mitzvah Nizakin. How could it be that that Shmuel was afraid that Shaul would kill him? What does the Gemara say? Heichad Shchiach Hazeka Shaini. That if it's a very dangerous thing, you can't just say, "Oh, I'm a Shliach Mitzvah; it's going to be fine." You don't have to have bitachon. You can't say, "Oh, I'm going to, you know, jump off a building and I have bitachon; Hakadosh Baruch Hu will save me." No, that's inappropriate bitachon. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara asks about Yaakov Avinu. Where was his bitachon? The Gemara in Brachos, I think it's Davav. And the Gemara says, where is Yaakov's bitachon? So the Gemara says that Yaakov was afraid, Shema Yigro Machet, that maybe he did an Avera, and because of that Avera, he won't deserve the favor of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So says the Chesed Avram, though, as follows. He says, Pshat in the Rambam is that the Rambam's asking a different kasha than the Gemara is asking. The Gemara, when it asks on Yaakov Avinu, is asking, how come Yaakov was afraid? HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him that he's going to guard him, that he's going to protect him. That was the Gemara's kasha. Why are you worried? Hashem explicitly promised you. Same by Shmuel. Why are you worried? Hashem said that he's going to take care of you. On that, the Gemara says by Yaakov, let's stick with Yaakov, Shemi Yigro Machet, that he was afraid, yes, I know Hashem promised that he would take care of me, but I'm afraid that maybe I did an Avera that would make that promise, that would render that promise void. Because that promise was for someone that that didn't do an Avera, I was afraid maybe I did an Avera, and therefore that promise is void. So that would therefore put Yaakov in a position of a person who doesn't have an explicit promise from Hashem. None of us have explicit promises from Hashem about anything, and yet we still have a mitzvah of bitachon. That's where the Rambam picks up. The Rambam says, yeah, I understand. He's not going to listen to Hashem's promise because he's afraid of Shem Yigram Achet. That makes Yaakov a regular person. And a regular person has a mitzvah of bitachon. So if he has a mitzvah of bitachon, where was his bitachon? And that's where the Rambam says, he wasn't perfect. And you don't have to be perfect to be a Navi. That's what the Chesed Avram writes. What does this have to do with our sugya? Says Rav Elchanan. It's so brilliant. Says Rav Elchanan. It seems to be against the Shlach HaKadosh in the Nebir in our Gemara. Because what did our Gemara say? That Rabbi Akiva was treated with Midas Hadin. Why was Rabbi Akiva treated with Midas Hadin? Why was Rabbi Akiva treated with Midas Hadin? Because he could handle it. He was that kind of person that he could handle it. Who is greater, Yaakov Avinu or Rabbi Akiva? You don't want to say. Probably Yaakov Avinu, right? We believe in Yiridas Hadoros. He was one of the Avos. Right? Yaakov Avinu is greater than Rabbi Akiva. Says Rav Elchanan, what does bitachon mean? What does it mean we have bitachon? What bitachon means is that we trust that Hashem will use Midas HaRachamim. We trust that Hashem will have Rachmanos on us. Bitachon is only something that's required of one who is actually subject to Midas HaRachamim. But if one is not subject to Midas HaRachamim, they're only subject to Midas HaDin, there is no mitzvah of bitachon. Because you don't have to trust Hashem will use Midas HaRachamim. Adrav, he's going to use Midas HaDin if you're such a tzaddik. So says Rav Elchanan, now I don't understand what Yaakov Avinu, what the Rambam is saying about Yaakov Avinu. That the Rambam is saying about Yaakov Avinu that, oh, so he has no explicit promise from Hashem, that the Gemara dealt with, but he still should have had bitachon, oh, so he must have been lacking. He wasn't lacking, he was greater than Rabbi Akiva. So that's not a lacking, he deserved to be treated with Midas HaDin. So he had no mitzvah bitachon. So that's how Rav Chana leaves that as a kasha, that the Shlach HaKadosh is against that Chesed Avram. I thought if you really take it to the next level, if you look at what the Gemara says about Yaakov, what was he afraid? Why didn't he trust the promise of Hashem? He was afraid, Shem Yirgum Achet. So Lishi Taso, he held that he was an Avarian, or at least possibly an Avarian. If he's possibly an Avarian, then he's not on the Madrega of Rabbi Akiva, and he, Lishi Taso, should be subject to Midas HaRachamim. And maybe that's where the Rambam was picking up. Okay, this is all somewhat convoluted, but it's pretty brilliant of Rav Elchanan Seder. So this Gemara always reminds me of that that piece in Kovetz Ma'amarim. It's a Maimar al Bitachon. He has right at the beginning of Kovetz. Kovetz, you ever see Kovetz Ma'amarim? You ever see the same? All the Rav Elchanan's are called Kovetz something. He didn't write any of them except for Kovetz Ha'aretz and which is an interesting sefer. He wrote Kovetz Ha'aretz is a Muslim sefer. That's his sefer on the Rashba Nivalt. He wrote a sefer on the Rashba. He didn't, which is, I'm not sure why. I don't know. It's like a strange thing to write a sefer on, but it's that's like his, the Kovetz Shiurim were written by Talmidim, which is those are the most learnable ones that you know have really nice basic hakiros with a couple of nafkaminas. You know, very those are the ones you hear most frequently quoted. Kovetz Ma'amarim is like hashkafic Ma'amarim that he had, I think, was also written by Talmidim, if I'm not mistaken. When I was younger, it was like this one thin volume. Now it's two big fat volumes. Rav Elchanan died way before I was. I don't know how he keeps writing, but they keep expanding the Kovetz Ma'amarim somehow.
Wasn't Kovetz Ma'amarim also published from like students' notes, like a Bar Ilai Baron?
Was it? I thought he wrote it.
Like a tradition.
Really? I always assumed he wrote it. There was a there were two Rebbeim in YU when I was in YU who were Talmidim Rav Elchanan, who were some of the writers of Kovetz Shiurim, I think. Rav Drillman Zichron Levracha, I forgot who the other one was. But Rav Drillman used to tell us stories about Rav Elchanan. Rav Drillman was one of these like old huge Talmidei Chacham Rosh Yeshiva. He had like two guys in his shiur. And you know, but like when he would talk, like Stam about the old days, like everyone wanted to listen. He stayed for Shabbos once, tells all these stories about Rav Elchanan. It was really, I don't think I was there, but I heard all the stories after. I was never in YU for Shabbos, so I don't think I was there. But in my memory, I'm putting myself there because I heard all the stories afterwards. But okay, so. Okay, so that's the story of Rabbi Akiva. Obviously, there must be a lot more to say about it, but that's it. We'll leave it at that for now because we have to get moving here. So says Gemara Vaitu now. So now that we know what these tagin / zainin / ksarim / what was the other word we had?
Coats,
right? So now we know that they exist and they were put there for the benefit of someone like Rabbi Akiva. Says Gemara Amar Rava, Shiva osios trichos shlosha ziyunin. Seven letters that each need three ziyunin. Ve'eluhein shatnas gates. So, and they are the shatnas gates letters. Shin ayin tas nun zayin gimel tzadi. Amar Rav Ashi, chazin aluhu l'safri davkani. Debei Rav. What are safri davkani? What? Right. So from who are exceedingly careful. Who do what? Dechatri lu l'gage deches. They do something on the top of the ches. We'll have to see what that means. Vitalu leila kari dehe, and these extremely careful sofrim also do something with the leg of the hay, which we'll have to see what that means as well. And then the Gemara goes into the whole thing of what the symbolism of that is, and what ches means, and what hay means, and olam hazeh, and olam haba, and all that stuff. But let's just take these three lines right here. Who writes, which type of sofrim write the ziyunin on shatnas gets letters? So is that only careful sofrim? It's what did the Gemara say with the shatnas gets letters? Shivos yos trichos shlosh is yun veilvein shatnas gets. Those seven letters, it didn't say anything about safri davkani. Sounds like that's for everybody. Everybody needs to write the shatnas gets letters. But when it comes to the chatre deches and the thing of the hay, that's safri davkani. So you see the Gemara changes the language somewhere in there. Now, you could imagine that some Rishon is going to come along and say, no, it's all about Safri Davkani. Or someone might come along and say that Safri Davkani means Sofer who are Medayik, and every Sofer needs to be Medayik, so all of this is Halacha for everybody. But just on the simplest reading of the Gemara, it sounds like there are two types of Halachos over here. And there are really three. Because if you look in Tosos starts quoting Shimusha Rabbah, some other tradition of other letters that are not shatnas gets and that are not hey and ches that also require some adjusting and some decorating. So you really might have three levels. You have the shatnas gets, which apparently everyone needs to have. You have the hey and the ches, which are apparently for Medina de Gemara for Sofer who want to be careful, and then you have this alternate tradition of Shimush Rabba letters. Now, in our Stam, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos, you will always see the Shatnez Getz letters with three Zayinin. You will always see some sort of Chitur de Ches or the Hay adjustments. The Shimush Rabba you don't always see. These other things you don't always see. Why not? So there is this great Sefer called Inside Stam, Rabbi Reuven Mendelitz. Someone just told me that he met him in Israel. He's a long-lost cousin of Sender Gross. Right? We discovered he's your second cousin. Rabbi Reuven Mendelitz is a sofer in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and if you ever need to buy tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, Megillah, you know, any of these types of things, and you know nothing, and you want to know everything, you get this book. He explains it like I read the book when I first bought the first edition of it before I lost it and he had to replace it by sending me a new one. When I first got the book, the first edition, I finished it over a Shabbos. We were on Diyar HaShabbat. I'm like, you just read right through. It just flows. It's a very, very easy read with pictures and everything. So he discusses these Shimush Rabba letters, and he asks that. He says all Stam contains letters with tagim, and he goes to the Shatnez Getz, and then he says the letters Beis Dalid Kuf Ches Yud and He, known as by the acronym Bedek Chaya, each also have a tag, and the source of these tagim can all be found in Chazal somewhere. There are Midrashim, there's something good, so we have that everywhere. However, he goes on to say the Shimusha Rabba, written by an unknown scholar in the Gaonic period between 650 and 1040 CE, Kach Kosva Rasham, states that Shatnez Getz only applies to specific letters in Mezuzah. Tefillin, on the other hand, have no such requirement. That Tefillin have no din of Shatnez Getz. Instead, the Shemush Rabbi gives a whole other list of letters that require tagin when you're writing Tefillin. So, although we do Shatnez Getz and Tefillin, Mezuzah, Sefer Torah, everything, we don't hold like the Shimush Rabba, right? We do on everything. But what about adding the Shimush Rabba tagin as well? So he says the standard practice when people write Ksav Beis Yosef or Ksav Velish is not to do the Shimush Rabba tagin. Although when people write Ksav Arizal, they do the Shimush Rabba tagin, which leads you to believe that there's. The Shemush Rabba Tagin are Kabbalistic in nature, so the Ksav Arizal will have it, whereas the Ksav Beis Yosef and Ksav Velish, the Sephardi Ksav and the standard Ashkenazi Ksav, will not have the Shemush Rabba Tagin. Why not? So he gives two reasons why not. First of all, he says, many sources mention lists of Tagin, but none of these lists are identical. Meaning, we don't have a good tradition of what exactly the Shemush Rabba Tagin are. So if we don't know what they are, it's going to be very hard to do it. And second, he says, every time you make a tag on a letter, every time you add a crown to a letter, you're taking a risk. Because if it becomes detailed, the tagin are very thin, so it could be very easy for a little bit of ink to scrape off. A detached tag might puzzle the whole thing. So if it becomes detached, it's risky. You don't want to add extra tagin if you don't have to. So where we have a tradition to do it, that's what we'll do. But we don't have a tradition to add a tag, then we're not going to add tagin where there's no tradition. Okay. Now, what exactly are Zayunin? What do they look like? So if you look at Rashi and Tosafot over here, they go through a little bit what the Zayunim are supposed to look like. And, you know, Rashi says that they're all on top, but the side ones slant out. Do they have that? You know, like over here by the Tzadi, this slants out that way, that slants out that way, and that one goes straight up. You have Tosus and Dibra Maschil Shatnez quotes three different Shitos that some say it's three straight up, some say it's one on the top, one on the right, one on the left. Some say it's one each on the upper right, upper left, and lower left, whatever it is. They have three Zayunin somewhere. The interesting shita is the shita of the Yerayim. The Yerayim says that Shatnez Getz, Shlosha Zayunin, has nothing to do. Zayunin are not tagin. They're not ksarim. These are different words. Yerayim says, what are Zayunin? Zayunin are to make sure they have sharp corners. That the letter itself should have a sharp corner. Now remember we said, the one chakira we always come back to. anything we're learning about a letter. Is it part of the tzura of the letter itself, or is it ksivastam, a dim ksivastam? According to the Yerayim, that this is how to shape these letters to make sure that they're squared on the top, it's clearly in the tzura of the oath. It's not an addition to the letter. It's this is how you shape the letter. When you make a Zion, when you make a Zion, you can't round off the edges of the Zion. You got to have them square. It's interesting, Shlosh is a unit, which means you only need to square 3 out of the 4 corners, which is weird. Why would you only need to square? But that's what the Urayim assumes. And we're makbid for that. If you look in the Sefer Torah, every Zion in the Sefer Torah, it's squared off. And by the Tzadi also, it's squared off over there, the three parts. By the Shin also, it's squared off. Right? It's never rounded by those parts. So asks Rabbi Mendelitz in Inside Stam, in the back of the Sefer, after you get through all the the basics and everything you need to know in buying Stam, he has Iyunin, or Miluin, in the back of the Sefer, where he wrote essays in Hebrew on a variety of different topics. And he says, well, if you look carefully at a Sefer Torah, we're careful that the way a Zion should look is that it should be squared off like the Urayim, right? We're also makbid to put Shlosh Zionim on top, to put 3 Tagin on top. How do each of those Tagin look? Those 3 things, they're Zions. But those Zions, people round off all the time. Why are people rounding off those Zions? If they're supposed to be Zions, shouldn't they be squared on the top also? Here's Kasha. Meaning, we're so makbid that our Zions be squared, because that's the Tzuras Os, that's what a Zion should look like. Then when we add these Zions on the top of the Shin, on the top of the Shatnas Getz letters, how come we aren't squaring off the Zions that we're adding on the top? So Rabbi Mendelitz suggests, just very partial. I think it's very partial. He says, why do we square off the Zions and not round them? Whose sheet are we following when we're squaring the Zions and not rounding them? That's the Urayim. The Urayim's taich of what? Of what it said in the Gemara when it said to the Shatnas Getz letters need Ziyunin. That is the fulfillment of Ziyunin according to the Urayim, to square them off. If you hold like any of the other Rishonim, how do we fulfill Ziyunin? By building these things on top of the horns, on top of the letters. There is no din of squaring off according to the other Rishonim. So Manavshach, according to the Urayim, you're already Yotze by making the actual top of the Zion square. And you don't even need, the arms sticking up on top of the Zion. According to the other Rishonim, that you do need arms sticking up on the top of the Zion, they don't need to be square, because there's no din anywhere that says that they need to be square. The Shlosh Zionin is 3 arms sticking up on the top. It has nothing to do with being square. So I thought that was a very good vart. That if you're satisfied, all we're doing is trying to satisfy all the Rishonim. And in fact, we're satisfying all the Rishonim by making the top of the Zion itself square, and the Zionin that we're sticking up from the top of the Zion, making that round. And I just want to mention one thing. Some guys were asking me before. We keep on going back to this chakira. Is it a din in ksivastam versus a din in tzuras ha'osios? And every time, what's the nafkamina? Get. Get is the nafkamina. Or for that matter, anything else. A ksuba or anything. Anytime you need, ksuba may be different, but anytime you need to write letters that don't have kedusha. So someone was asking me, like, what's this din of kedusha, of kedusha stam? What makes Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah different than a get? So there are halachic differences between something that is ink and paper and is kadosh versus something that's ink and paper and is used for a mitzvah. In general, there are halachic differences between tashmishe mitzvah and tashmishe kedusha. This is important background I probably should have gone through on the first day. The Gemara Maseches Megillah tells us that tashmishe mitzvah la'achar zman mitzvasan, if you have something you use for a mitzvah, let's say a lulav, number one shaila I get the day after Sukkot every year. How do I get rid of my lulav? What do I do? How am I allowed to throw it out? So what's the halacha? Do you have to bury it? Do you have to put it in Shemus? No. Tashmishe mitzvah l'achar zman mitzvasan, nizrakin, you could chuck it. Okay, so we put it, we discard it in a respectful way. We put it inside a bag and, discard it that way. But ultimately we put it in the garbage. strictly speaking, you could do whatever you want with it. Strictly speaking, you know, it's lachas man mitzvah, son. This is rocking. You chuck it. You get rid of it. I once heard Rabbi Benjamin Yudin giving a Dvar Torah, and he was talking about Tashmishe Mitzvah. You know Rabbi Yudin at all? Anybody know Rabbi Yudin? He's like the biggest tzaddik in the world, I guess. I can't imagine that there's a bigger one. So he was he was talking about this halach. So like when, you know, I teach in a high school, so you always try to be as attention grabbing as possible. So like, what do you do with your lulav when you're done? You can flush it down the toilet. You can whatever, you know, like I'll express the halacha in that way, strictly speaking. Rabbi Yudin says, would you take it and throw it in the, I can't even say, garbage? Would you? You can't even say the word garbage, and I'm talking about flushing down the toilet and peeing on it. So anyway, so the strict halacha is that tashmishe mitzvah lachas man mitzvah, you can get rid of them. That's it. You get rid of them. Tashmishe kedusha are totally different. Tashmishe kedusha, even if you can no longer use it, your tefillin get worn out, your mezuzah is worn out, it's no longer kosher. What do you do with it? Nignazin. You have to bury it. There is tashmishe mitzvah, tashmishe kedusha. What makes something tashmishe kedusha versus tashmishe mitzvah? So Rav Shechter writes in Eretz Hatzvi, I think in the name of Salvechik, that tashmishe kedusha, they're both used for mitzvahs, but tashmishe kedusha is anything that has the Shem Hashem, a ksav of Shem Hashem on it. If it has a ksav of Shem Hashem, that makes it tashmishe kedusha. So a get, for example, doesn't have a Shem Hashem. A get is tashmisha mitzvah, it's not tashmisha kedusha. When you're done with the get, you know what we do with getting after it's given? We give the woman a note that certifies from the basin that she got a get, and then we tear the get. They fold it up in a special way, and they tear it in a certain way. They tear it. You would never do that to a mezuzah or a parshios of tefillin or a sefer Torah. You would never do something like that, because it's tashmisha kedusha. Tashmisha kedusha, there's always a remnant of the kedusha left. Rav Shechter writes in a footnote in that piece in Eretz Hatzvi that he thought that maybe that's how you could explain the halacha that Meikra Din Meisei Akum do not require kavura, whereas Meisei Yisrael require kavura. If a person dies, do you bury them? A Jew, there's a mitzvah of kavura. For a non-Jew, there's no mitzvah of kavura. If a non-Jew wants to get cremated, so you have no problem. If a Jew wants to get cremated, we put up a whole fuss and we try to do whatever we can to avoid that. Why? Why is there a din of kavura? So he said maybe that the pshat. So what are you going to say? That because Jews have 613 mitzvahs and non-Jews have 7 mitzvahs, it's all a numbers game of how many mitzvahs we have? So he doesn't think that's pshat. He says by a Jew, the Torah is kasuv aluach libecha, the pasuk says that the Torah is ki'ilu, it's written on the parchment of our heart, and what that means is that the Jewish guf is the klaf for Torah shebal peh. That just like Torah shebichsav has ksav and has klaf, the Jewish guf is klaf for Torah shebal peh. And there are makoros in Chazal that seem to bear this out. For example, the Gemara Moed Katan says that if you're there at the Shas Yitzias Neshama, if you're there when a Jew dies, you tear Kriya. And the Gemara says it's just like being there when a Sefer Torah is Nisraf. When a Sefer Torah is burnt. What does that with a Jewish person dying have to do with a Sefer Torah getting burnt? What's the connection between the two? No, the connection is that the Jewish body is the klaf for Torah Shebal Peh, and Mela, it has a din of Kedusha Sefer Torah. It has a din of Tashmisha Kedusha. So Goyim have to do mitzvahs their whole life, for sure. Shev mitzvah ne'noch. But what's the din of Tashmisha mitzvah lachar zman mitzvah son? You discard it. However you discard it, you discard it. You want to cremate it? Cremate it. What's the din of Tashmisha Kedusha lachar zman mitzvah son? It still retains Kedusha and has to be treated as such. It's not because, I don't think it's because the reason we have a mitzvah of Purim is because of Tchias HaMeisim. It's going to take a lot for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to rebuild us anyway. You know, after a person has been buried, you know, it's not like if you were to go into a cemetery and dig up and see what's there. You know, it's not people that look like people. You know, you're left with bones after a while or decomposing flesh. It's going to take some work. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could probably do that with, I would imagine, he's fully capable of doing that with the ashes also. But it's a din that we require kvura, that we require mitzvah kvura, and that there's an isra of nivul ames. And this probably all relates to the inherent kedusha of a Jew. So that may be some of the difference between tashmisha mitzvah versus tashmisha kedusha. Ksiva stam are all dinim in all the dinim of ksiva stam that we've been talking about are dinim in creating tashmisha kedusha. They're not. Tzuras Os is just the alphabet. What is the letter supposed to look like? But all of these dinim of Ksiva Stam that we've been talking about are all dinim relating to Tashmishei Kedusha.
If it's possible, like, say the Torah sort of goes off, would it retain the Kedusha?
If it's possible, probably not. Right? Probably not. But you know, but the Shem Hashem, right, the Shem Hashem itself would have Kedusha. So you would still have to, be gonies. You just couldn't use it for the mitzvah. Right? Let's see. We're out of time. Okay, so Bez Hashem, tomorrow we're not going to really have Seder, I guess. We'll just have Shir, but we'll actually finish this. I know we're supposed to do a different topic every day, but we didn't do any. We didn't do Shatnas Getz today. So God willing, tomorrow Shatnas Getz, the Hey, the Ches, we'll get through all that tomorrow, and then we'll move on to Tzvilus the Rashi, Rabbi Natan.